Eu o cumprimento e queria também cumprimentar o deputado federal Zequinha Sarney, que vou agora anunciar o próximo orador, em seguida será Vossa Excelência. Eu convido então para fazer uso da palavra, fazer sua exposição, o doutor Arnold Cray Rumber. Com a palavra, Vossa Senhoria.
Thank you very much, Senator Viana. It's a personal pleasure for me to be back in the Senate of Brazil. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Brazil is a very special place for UNEP because Brazil, as a country, has been a driver and a convener of many of the developments that have led to the environmental constitutionalism that we can appreciate globally at the moment. And it is this growth of environmental constitutionalism that I think the legislators in particular should be proud of. The speed and the depth of these developments are unparalleled in other legal fields, and so are the successes that environmental law has enjoyed over the years. As you, Senator, and other speakers have already highlighted, in 2016, environmental law is no longer a field that only concerns a few. It no longer occupies only a niche of lawmaking. It is at the heart and center of humanity's quest for a better, more sustainable, fairer, and just future. As stated by the 2030 Development Agenda, a world without poverty and hunger, and where people can fulfill their potential in dignity and equality and in a healthy environment. However, the successes we have achieved in the past, from the conceptualization of legal principles, their adoption in legal frameworks, the promotion of environmental rights, the phasing out of ozone-depleting substances, or only recently the signing of the Paris Agreement or the coming together of the global community to address the issue of pollution and poisoning through mercury, these successes also show us that we need to work harder as lawmakers and as the legal community as a whole going forward. We are not quite yet where we ought to be. There are still millions of people every year who die from the consequences and conditions attributable to an unhealthy environment. Millions more are unable to obtain clean drinking water and lack access to sanitation, and suffer from chronic undernourishment because they lack the resources to grow or purchase sufficient food to satisfy their needs. This is compounded by growing energy needs around the world. And it's just as environmental provisions are increasingly included in the highest orders of laws at the national level, national constitutions, environmental law needs to rise to the challenge of providing a workable framework for the world going forward, one that recognizes the multitude of connections with other disciplines, and a framework that is capable of achieving the aspirations laid out in the 2030 Development Agenda and the SDGs. And in a bid to do exactly that and equip environmental law with the necessary standing and wherewithal going forward, in 2013, UNEP's Governing Council, at the first session first universal session of UNEP's governing body, adopted decision 27/9 on advancing justice, governance, and law for environmental sustainability. And this is the first intergovernmentally negotiated document that mentions the term environmental rule of law. In this decision, governments recognize the important contributions made by environmental law to sustainable development, but they also recognized that there is need going forward for even greater promotion and development of environmental rule of law, the rule of law in the field of the environment. Although the term may have been first coined in 2013, its precepts have been evident as early as 1972 and throughout the evolutions of principles, rules, and programs that have helped develop environmental law. So the past provides us with a blueprint for the future, but it is the further refinement of good environmental governance and the contours of environmental rule of law, as well as the actual implementation of these concepts, which will define our successes in the decades to come. In the past, this has often been a very noticeable shortcoming of environmental law. People and communities have too often not been able to feel the benefits of environmental law and the value of their individual environmental rights in practice. So what do we need to do going forward? We need clear, fair, and implementable environmental laws. For environmental governance systems to be effective, law should provide a clear roadmap for translating general legal mandates, such as these many constitutional provisions, into practice. This provides clarity to the regulated community regarding requirements and reporting and facilitates compliance in the long term. And in this context, we should recognize the pivotal role of legislators in this effort and going forward. We need to do more to develop legal frameworks regarding liability and compensation for victims of pollution and other environmental damage. Although liability for environmental damage is a recognized concept at the international level. For example, we do not have yet a globally accepted terminology for environmental crimes. And often citizens have not been able to reap the benefits of compensation for environmental damage at the national level. So in this area, much more needs to be done to achieve a fairer and more just distribution of environmental damage going forward. Then we need to work towards further eliminating the financial and other barriers obstructing access to justice in environmental matters. Courts and tribunals the world over now address environmental issues, and more than 50 states have established specialized courts and tribunals. However, citizen access to justice in environmental matters still differs greatly from country to country, and it is far from being barrier-free. These barriers must be removed, and the capacity of courts and tribunals to dispose of environmental cases must be strengthened. Next, I would like to highlight an issue that has also been recognized just recently in the Paris Agreement, and that is the increasingly mutually reinforcing relationship between human rights and the environment. In the last few decades, there has been a growing consciousness regarding this relationship and between a safe and healthy environment and the full enjoyment of human rights. We need to continue to capitalize on this relationship going forward. And finally, we need greater accountability and integrity of institutions and decision makers. This can be achieved through utilizing the auditing community more in the development and implementation of environmental law, and it will ultimately help in ensuring compliance with environmental laws and in remediating environmental damage. The 2030 Agenda and the SDGs, as well as the Paris Agreement, they provide all of us with a unique opportunity to ensure that sustainable development is based on the rule of law and it's based on rights. We must continue developing and promoting programs that enhance and reinforce the capacity of all stakeholders involved in making environmental law work, just as this gathering here today and also the Congress that we will inaugurate tomorrow in Rio de Janeiro. Just and sustainable development outcomes and the resilience of the poor and those in vulnerable situations to environment-related extreme events require all of us to ensure the further development and operationalization of environmental constitutionalism and a state whereby environmental law and rights exist in practice everywhere and for everyone. This is where environmental rule of law can make a difference, and this is why it's so important to promote it going forward. I thank you very much for this opportunity.
Eu agradeço a participação e queria, nesse momento, já mudando aqui o enfoque, passar a palavra para debatermos legisladores e ambiente, desafios e perspectivas. Eu queria convidar, e se quiser fazer uso da tribuna, deputado, ex-ministro do Meio Ambiente do Brasil, deputado Sarney Filho. Em seguida, vamos ouvir a diretora, uma amiga, diretora executiva da Globo. Em seguida. Deputado Sarney Filho, ex-ministro do Meio Ambiente, Vossa Excelência tem a palavra.
Obrigado, senador Jorge Viana, vice-presidente do Senado, ex-governador do Estado do Acre e um parceiro da causa ambiental, tanto aqui no Congresso quanto no Executivo. A mim foi pedido que falasse hoje sobre legisladores e ambiente, desafios e perspectivas. Começo dizendo que participei na semana passada, a convite do ministro do Supremo Tribunal Federal, Luiz Fux, de uma audiência pública sobre o novo Código Florestal. O objetivo da audiência foi reunir subsídios para que o ministro formasse seu juízo sobre as ações diretas de inconstitucionalidade ajuizadas pela Procuradoria-Geral da República e pelo Partido Socialismo e Liberdade. Trata-se de um assunto emblemático no que tange o tema que aqui debatemos, devido à amplitude do alcance de suas determinações. Fui um crítico quanto mais dos argumentos que moveram o processo de revisão da Lei 4771 de 1965, o antigo Código Florestal, os quais se basearam, segundo o meu entendimento, em um modelo de desenvolvimento arcaico, centrado nas mesmas diretrizes que orientaram a ocupação da Mata Atlântica no período colonial e no século XIX. Naquela época, não se tinha noção clara dos efeitos do desmatamento sobre a biodiversidade, os solos, as nascentes e os rios. Mas hoje, como sabemos, não é mais assim. A ciência já demonstrou a importância da vegetação nativa para a manutenção dos serviços ecossistêmicos. A vegetação nativa, especialmente aquela situada nas áreas de preservação permanente, é fundamental para a segurança das populações. E a ocupação irregular de encostas íngremes das áreas de inundação do rio são o principal fator responsável pelas inúmeras mortes observadas todos os anos na época das chuvas em decorrência dos desastres. O descumprimento da legislação florestal gera consequências que vão além da propriedade privada e atinge a toda a sociedade brasileira. Recuperar os ecossistemas degradados tem custos muito mais altos do que a manutenção da vegetação nativa, além de não propiciar a restauração plena dos serviços ecossistêmicos. Descumprir a legislação traz lucros de curto prazo para quem desmata, mas causa prejuízos de longo prazo, se não permanentes, para toda a sociedade, o que me parece ainda pior para as futuras gerações. Diversos dispositivos possibilitam a redução da vegetação nativa protegida. Por exemplo, na nova lei, as áreas de preservação permanente de curso d'água são delimitadas a partir da calha por onde correm regularmente as águas e não a partir do leito maior, como ocorria antes. No lugar de valorizar a biodiversidade como patrimônio da nação, como determina a Constituição Federal, a nova lei não apenas consolidou desmatamentos ilegais, como diminuiu a proteção da vegetação nativa em terras privadas. A revisão do Código Florestal não foi motivada por um melhor ordenamento do território nacional que propiciasse a implantação de uma agricultura pautada em critérios de sustentabilidade ecológica. Tenho dito, reiteradas vezes, que não se trata de demonizar os agricultores. Muito pelo contrário, respeitamos o setor agropecuário e reconhecemos sua enorme importância para a economia nacional. Entretanto, não podemos ficar reféns de argumentos econômicos e ignorar os impactos de ordem ecológica e social decorrente do modelo agropecuário adotado por parte dos produtores.